I'm John Batchelor. The headline in the Jerusalem Post, Iran can produce fissile material for a nuclear bomb within 2 weeks. I welcome Benan Bentaleb, who is senior fellow for the Foundation of Democracies, who, with his colleague Andrea Stricker, is keeping me informed by developing a timeline of the events of these last years, where we are now and where we've come from with regard to the Islamic Republic of Iran and its suspect nuclear weapons program. Not very suspect anymore, sort of right out there in the front. Benan, a very good evening to you. 2 weeks, this had to do with a timeline of how much material they have, how fast it is to convert to a bomb. I understand there are some details, however. Just having enough fissile material at 60% or 90% isn't a bomb. There are more important details to do with the trigger and the exact way of miniaturizing what you've got. Has Iran advanced all of that coterminous with the enrichment process? Good evening to you.
A very good evening to you, John. You quite literally put your finger on the most important question, the several million dollar question, some would say, because as Iran continues to break through previous enrichment barriers, not just set by the JCPOA, but also set by things that I think really the Europeans would never have imagined Tehran do, to enrich to 60% purity, which is a stone's throw from weapons grade, to essentially flirt with 83-84% enrichment, which we saw earlier this year, earlier in 2023, and still no major action by Europe. The problem with weaponization is that it's the hardest element of the march to the bomb to detect. There's the fissile material element, which is the uranium, the stuff that's out in the open, the stuff that's now being concealed from the IAEA, the stuff that Iran has now been able to amass on its territory. Based on independent reports, if you take everything that Iran has enriched on its territory today, as of September, October 2023, Iran could produce 10 bombs worth of weapons-grade uranium in about 4 months' time. That's using its entire declared national stockpile. What you touch on is what they would have to do to go marry that weapons-grade uranium, not just with a delivery vehicle, which in the past the U.S. intelligence community has said would be a ballistic missile, but the weaponization game. We don't know exactly that, which has been mastered. We know in the past, obviously, they flirted with this. There's the Ahmad program. There's the stuff from the nuclear archive. There's the stuff from the IAEA reports in 2008 and 2011. The most worrisome language from those past reports. Fans of the U.S. intelligence community like to tout that, you know, the larger march of the bomb stopped at some point in 2003. But what they missed from those IAEA statements is that some things continued in unstructured fashion until 2004. The question now is, with Iran breaking through enrichment barriers, with Iran circumscribing IAEA access, with Iran kicking out IAEA inspectors and limiting their visas, with the regime more confident, more capable, would they again pick up where they left off in a quote unquote unstructured fashion? That's a incredibly challenging intelligence question to detect. It could be happening on a USB drive, in a laptop, in a laboratory, in a subterranean research facility, in an academic institution, quite literally printed out on blueprints, miniaturization. There is much that we don't know. And that is a problem. Your average estimates of how long it takes is anywhere from 12 to 24 months, with more kind of predictable estimates from 12 to 16 to 18 months.
The statements that Iran is or is not making a weapon right now, these statements are commonplace. I read them all the time. Is there any reason to believe that those statements are based upon primary intelligence, or are they speculation on the basis of road signs or trail signs or allusions in the Iranian press? What kind of clarity do we have in the open media? I'm not talking about secret media, the open media. How should we read the open media when it says 2 weeks or 10 days or they have this or they have that? Help the audience understand those scary headlines, Benan.
Well, unfortunately, John, as you know, the vast majority of the reporting on Iran is unfortunately politicized. A lot of it is circular reporting. Many of the estimates that we have, for instance, what you cited about 12 days for one bomb's worth of weapons-grade uranium, or what I cited, which is 4 months for 10 bombs' worth of weapons-grade uranium, those estimates come from independent calculations, in this case, by the International Institute. It's the Good ISIS, by the way. It's the Good ISIS Twitter, ISIS, run by David Albright, that draws on publicly available International Atomic Energy Agency reports, which are produced quarterly on the Islamic Republic's nuclear program. So this is available out there, as are the ISIS calculations as to how to get those numbers using figures that were based on inspections by the IAEA. The rest of the reporting about what Iran is and isn't doing, unless you're speaking to an intelligence official, is likely going to have to be couched with language like reportedly, assumedly, allegedly, or based on the worldwide threat assessments that the DNI puts out every year here in the U.S., which again seems to more narrowly define the issue.
Let's turn to the timeline, because this is the way I follow the story. August, September, U.S. and Iran announced swap of five U.S. hostages for five Iranians convicted of or being held on charges, plus unfreezing of $6 billion in Iranian assets. You have it on the timeline along with all of the revelations or puzzles about the suspect nuclear weapons program. Is there a direct link between the $6 billion, the hostages, and right now where Iran is in the nuclear weapons cycle?
Perhaps not in the cycle, but in the U.S. attempts to stop or delay, or the desire in the Iranian press. In fact, stories that have come out, stories reported in English based on assessments of Persian language material or based on sources some folks have in Iran about Iran's desire to somehow continue indirect bilateral diplomacy. All of these things, in my view, are indeed basically linked. In fact, for an administration like the Biden administration, which seems to believe in pay to play, seems to believe in pay to delay, which seems to define their overall Iran effort, the hostage deal that you had mentioned is proof of concept that it can deliver on some kind of sanctions relief. So despite, you know, Rob Malley, the former special envoy, and despite many other administration officials saying that hostage diplomacy and nuclear diplomacy were never really linked, it's proof of concept for the administration that it can deliver some kind of relief to Tehran, and therefore Tehran should trust it and come to the table and negotiate in good faith. If you believe all of that, of course, there's a bridge I'd be happy to sell you after about Tehran's willingness to engage in good faith for a regime that is able to export just over 2 million barrels of oil per day. In my view, I don't believe it would be negotiating good faith just to get to 2.4 million barrels of oil per day, because it would have to once again shake hands with an entity it deems the great Satan. The hostage deal matter is therefore more important politically in Iran than the talks over resurrecting the JCPOA, because you had hardline press touting the hostage deal as a way to get cash without having to succumb to another JCPOA.
Your timeline also emphasizes 63 countries, including the U.S. and the EU, released joint statements calling for Iran's cooperation with the IAEA and a investigation. Those statements, and the fact that we have a separate statement from U.S., France, Germany, and U.K. releasing a separate statement indicating the IAEA may act, failing Iran's compliance. Do they have an enforcement backing this up? Because I understand these statements are strong and they're all going in the right direction, but what is the mechanism after the statement?
Well, one thing is that obviously any statement could certainly be stronger. There's an ability of the board of the International Atomic Energy Agency to issue a resolution of censure. You haven't really seen that much while the Biden administration has been at the helm. Beyond a resolution of censure, which is that takes that tough language and translates it into print, you have the ability to refer the issue to the Security Council. Obviously, there you have Russia and China, more of Iran's lawyers than ever before. So that means the only major normative diplomatic enforcement mechanism that exists is snapback, is the restoration of previous UN penalties. Because if we don't do snapback, Sean, you also put your finger at the heart of the matter here. If we don't do snapback, we'll be relying on maybe tough rhetoric and maybe sometimes tough resolutions to get Iran to comply with something it's not complying with already. And for those of us who care about international organizations and not letting Russia and China chip away at American influence in these organizations, if we don't snap back before it expires, before the snapback tool expires in 2025, the UN Security Council, basically as the enforcement mechanism of last resort, because it's the only UN body with binding resolutions and that can issue sanctions, will no longer be able to be a tool against the Islamic Republic. We will never be able to use the UNSC again, given the way the Russia-Ukraine war is going and given the way that the U.S.-China great power competition matter is going.
Implicit in the threat of this nuclear weapon in the hands of the Islamic regime is a delivery system that can strike into the hearts of Europe and also Russia. And when we come back, the missile proliferation in Iran is now released in some important fashion. Ben Taliblu, he is a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.